Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, let's celebrate. The deal is done. And welcome to the special edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein, joined by World Soccer Talk's Kartik Krishnayer. The CBA has officially been ratified. Both parties have agreed. This has been a real long set of circumstances. There, finally, we have an answer. We have something in writing. Kartik Krishnayer, I have to say, Kartik, this has been probably... I wouldn't say it had the same issues of last CBA negotiations, but my God, this went down to the wire again, but a lot more intense.
It certainly did, Daniel. Pro soccer is saved here in the United States and Canada. We're going to have a big game in Orlando, my neck of the woods, on Sunday. 65,000 people for the return of pro soccer to the state of Florida. And it's going to be real exciting. I tell you, the players, they played their cards about as well as I thought they could have. I had, and let me just preface this for all our listeners. I have far more contacts and sources on the player side of this than on the management side of this. I have several player sources. I have union sources. I have all of that. To be honest with you, I don't talk to many people in MLS management, both at the league level or at team level. So a lot of what I was getting was one-sided.
Mm-hmm.
Based on what I was gathering the last few weeks, I thought the players were in a pickle. They had boxed themselves into a position where they were not going to get any sort of free agency, and which they would have to strike or pursue some sort of litigation like the Frazier case, again, in order to get something. But they played their cards as well as they could have, and their deck of cards wasn't as strong as the league's deck of cards. But they played them well, and they got what they needed out of this.
Yeah, they got – I mean, I have to say
– Daniel, let me backtrack. We think they got what they needed out of this. My understanding is, and I've now seen Ivis take it, our friend Ivis Galarza, take it a step further. I had been told when I'd heard a deal was done a couple hours ago. I had been told by some of my player sources that they weren't necessarily thrilled with the deal, or a couple of the sources I talked to. So, that's embargo, that was privileged. And I think I put this on social media earlier when you announced we were going to have this discussion at 8 o'clock today, that a lot of my conversations have been privileged with people. They've been sources, but I haven't reported things because they're for background for a story or stories after the deal is done. I didn't want to report things and burn anyone during the negotiations.
No, of course not.
But there are some players who I'm not going to get into names, but there are some guys that are not necessarily whatever the deal is. And I don't know what the deal is. But whatever the deal is, mm-hmm, may not have been ideal for some of the harder line players. But I think, skillful negotiating. I'd love to know what happened in that room the last 2 days, because Bob Foose was a guy that had been dogged by some of the people I talked to as being too nice a guy that couldn't go toe-to-toe with Mark Abbott and Don Garber and the MLS owners. But he seems to have gotten something, some kind of move towards free agency. And I have to tell you about free agency. I think once the door is open, it will eventually happen. And so whether that means 7 years from now in the next CBA or it's 10 years from now or there's litigation now that they've opened this door, it will eventually happen, full-blown free agency. I think that the important thing for the union was to get some sort of acknowledged, some sort of free agent trigger other than this reentry draft from the last CBA, which, you know, really was not that was kind of a scam. And they got that, whether it's 28-8 or 28-6 maybe. You know, I've heard rumors that maybe down to 6 years, whatever the case would be, I think they got something to players. And what did Major League Soccer get? There won't be a strike.
Exactly.
That's what they
and
got.
That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
And that's the most important thing, Kardik. That, you know, look, if the players did strike because, you know, I can still understand why they would strike. And believe me, we want the players to get a fair share of what's been going on here. Obviously, over $200 million in expansion franchise fees, courtesy of Man City's New York City FC, the LAFC group, Atlanta coming in 2017. They, you know, the ownership of the Atlanta Falcons getting involved as well. I mean, we're talking about a big $600 million television deal combined with Fox Sports, ESPN, Univision, with their Unimas and Univision Deportes channels. I mean, we're seeing a lot of money being thrown around to MLS. And just recently, Kardik, if I can just – this was also reported today over by Sports Business Daily, Sports Business Journal, MLS and Audi – have struck a deal for a 4-year deal for Audi to become the official sponsor of MLS, as well as in the playoffs when the MLS Cup playoffs begin later on down in November. So there's a lot of cash being thrown around here. And, you know, for Major League Soccer, I mean, obviously there are probably going to be some owners that wanted to help make the league a little bit better. There's, of course, some owners that probably don't want that yet, but still, these deals have been made finally, and so far, it looks like, while there probably there are some unhappy players and some unhappy owners on both sides of these CBA negotiations, still, the number one thing is this. We're going to have a season. We're going to start on time this weekend, this coming Friday night. Thank goodness.
Yeah, we are going to start on time. So we're going to have a season, and obviously this also affects USL Pro, or USL now. Sorry, they've reformulated
yeah,
their name. I don't know how, by the way, USL stands for United Soccer Leagues. So I don't know if USL, their professional league, or so-called professional league, is a – I know I've just – treated something very controversial, so I might as well clarify that week later. But USL, their league with professional players, has a big soccer where all of their teams, independent teams, get at least 5 loan players. There, I had reported earlier in the week, and actually spent some time with Dwayne Rollins, our friend in Toronto, this morning, explaining on his show that a number of USL teams have reached out to NASL teams to try and get some players on loan because they were going to be affected by a potential NASL CBA an MLS strike. So now their season can go on as – I mean, their season was always going to go on as planned, but they were going to have to scramble to get players. So they're fine. And then as far as the North American Soccer League is concerned, my former employer, this CBA, if it's as good as it might be for the players, I think it really hurts the NASL. It puts the NASL in a position where they're gonna have a fight on their hands going forward because they've been able to get a lot of players in the NASL based on low-salary MLS salary dumps, middle-level players being dumped, Tampa Bay, New York Cosmos, Minnesota, really Tampa Bay, New York Cosmos. Those two teams have been able to raid players from MLS. I'm actually working on a feature on both those teams about the guys mm-hmm. that they've taken from MLS teams that were at that 36,000 level or 45,000. There were some guys like Hunter Freeman who were making more money who jumped to the NASL. But I think this deal if it's what we think it is, will probably really hurt the NASL. But we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, we will. But obviously, going through social media right now, and if anyone wants to give us your opinion, obviously the phone line is open, 646-929-1823, 646-929-1823. We're live here, blogtalkradio.com/Feuerstein's Fire, along with Carter Krishnire of World Soccer Talk. I'm Daniel Feuerstein. As once again, the CBA, a lot of really nasty words going back and forth. The owner of Real Salt Lake getting fined $250,000 by Don Garber. And obviously that's the biggest fine I've ever seen MLS throw, either at a player or an owner. Obviously,
yeah,
not on
I mean,
the
remember
field
when
stuff.
We got the $500 fine for Brian Ching and all of us were sending him money? We're raising money
yep.
for him when he got a $500 yep. fine? So, I mean,
yep.
for MLS, I think Kevin Payne once got a ridiculous fine, right?
Yep.
A fine kind of like that. But, yeah, this is fairly unprecedented for MLS.
It really is. It's just amazing. You never thought they're going to go that deep into the one of their owners' pockets for just basically screaming that, well, we're told not to we're not going to get free agency. It's not going to happen. We don't understand why the players are asking for it. You know what? The truth is, Kardik, Don Garber, I have to give Don Garber credit here. I really, really have to give him credit because he probably wouldn't have done this. He probably would have just said, okay, look, I'm going to give you a warning. I'm not going to do anything right now. I'm going to give you a warning, and we're just going to move forward. No, that was a gutsy move by Don Garber to go to one of his bosses and to tell him, I'm going to lighten the load in your wallet. And that's really lightening the load, $250,000 worth lightening the load. Give credit to Don Garber because I think you saw from Garber he wanted a season. He really did not want a strike. I bet if he was forced to lock out the players, he probably would have grudgingly. But give Don Garber credit. He wanted a season. He wanted this 20th season to get underway and on time.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a real kind of feel-good feeling in many quarters about this. There are some players who are not going to be happy, though. So, and I have to say that that's probably a good thing. And those players, hopefully they get something out of the CBA, the players that are unhappy. If not, they always have the European. If they're good enough, they can play in Europe. I mean, it's that simple. the guys that really needed help with the CBA, though, and we'll get into this in a few minutes, were guys that were not good enough to go to Europe and guys who were too good to play in NASL. So,
yeah.
And maybe weren't able to go to the Mexican League. So those were guys that were stuck in MLS, that had been stuck in MLS, U.S.-based players. And Daniel, there's a lot I wanted to say tonight, but, you know, the deal just came through. That's why we're kind of in, like, this giddy mood, and this isn't as formal and as on point as maybe you and I had hoped it would be. But it's a matter of time.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll get through these points in a little bit. But my point is that the guys that were really, really, really needing a good CBA, a good negotiation from Bob Fuss and his team, were mid-level American players, mid-level Canadian players, guys who were too good for NASL, not good enough to go to Europe and test the market by going to Europe. So did they get what they wanted? I don't know, because a lot of the player reps that I think were skeptical about mm-hmm. this deal are those players. Are mid-level American players, guys who might have two or three caps to get called in for a January camp. It's tough to say. You know, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to wait and see.
Depends
we definitely are going to. Yep. It's. I mean, once the details come out, obviously we'll find out. Hopefully, in a couple of minutes or so, maybe 10, 15 minutes, we'll find out. But once again, very happy to hear. Very happy to discuss with everyone that the Major League Soccer season, the 20th season of MLS, will get underway this coming Friday. Kardik, we also have to discuss, obviously, tonight would have been a real pickle for DC United. I have my own source as well. I mean, it was a split locker room in RFK for DC United. Half were ready to go and walk off the field, not even bother playing this game, Some were saying, no, we have to play this game. We got to go out there. We got to go and perform. Got to try to get out of a three-goal deficit against Alajuelense, who are right now playing on Fox Sports 2, if some of you want to watch that and, of course, listen at the same time to the show. You know, this is a situation where, boy, these players, and if you think about it, what happened in Montreal on Tuesday night against Pachuca, that late goal by Cameron Porter that gave the impact going to the semifinals of the CONCACAF Champions League through away goals. I mean, this is an amazing thing.
Yeah, what a great
United players would have walked off or not.
Yeah, I had a source that told me DC was going to play this game, and then and presumably they're down three goals in the tie already, right? So they presumably be eliminated, and then kind of just fold the tent and walk. Had they advanced, I mean, had this deal not been done and they advanced, there would have been dilemma. Now Montreal has said they want to play. Montreal is a different scenario and situation than DC. I think the Montreal situation is that this is a very, very big deal for that team. And they actually, when they were a USL team, they actually went very deep in the CONCACAF Champions League also. And if you remember, kind of got undone. This is irony, right? It was against the Mexican club Santos Laguna, 2009 Champions League, where they took a two-goal lead back to Mexico, then scored two away goals, and were ahead in the tie like 4-1. Santos Laguna got it to 4-2 and then scored, what was it? They scored a goal in like the 87th minute, and then they scored two goals in stoppage time to beat them. And, you know, the Montreal players were deaded by that point. So this is kind of turnabout as fair play. But it's a very, very big deal for that city and for that club. I know they had 60,000 when they played in that Champions League game when they were in USL. I mean, so it's a big deal. Whereas for DC, they've won this competition, or the forerunner of this competition before. They've won 12 trophies in their history. They really didn't think they were going to win this. And I think DC also has a lot of those mid-level American players I'm talking about who, I mean, this is very important to them. I don't know. I have to check out Ivis Galarsis reporting later after we're off there. I'm not sure which teams voted against this deal, if he's revealed these teams. I can report that I think I can report this safely on this show, particularly because you're a Red Bull fan. I know the Red Bulls were one of the teams that had player rep and some players that were that really weren't thrilled with where the negotiations were going. I'll just leave it at that. I'm not sure if they voted against the deal. I'm thinking they might have been one of those, I think, seven teams I just reported that voted against it. I would guess Red Bull is one of them. I'm not sure about the others, but
I know Dax McCarty and Luis Robles was not at the Red Bull Media Day new home jersey unveiling ceremony at Webster Hall last night. I'll talk about that another time with you, but Webster Hall, it's one of the great places to go and have a good time in New York. That's all I'll say, but but yeah, they weren't there for media day. Obviously working with these negotiations, at the moment being reported right now, Jonathan Tannenwald, from philly.com, it's a 5-year CBA deal. So that's a big win for the players.
That's a big victory for the players. That's a big victory for the players. Look, the union, Bob Pouce did a good job to get that down to 5 years. Look, the things I was hearing, now we heard 7 years earlier today. I was hearing MLS wanted an 8-year deal last week. And, I talk, he's a reporter to sources, but I've also worked in the game. And a lot of there are players who trust me. And I told the players, you know, you're roped into an 8-year CBA. You might as well just, even if they give you full free agency, if it's an 8-year CBA, with the way the market is growing in this country for soccer, don't take it. I don't care what they give you. But 5 years, that's very good. That's very, very good for the players.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a great deal. And you're right. If MLS is going to give you 8 years on the CBA, but if they're a little bit, you know, cautious, which, you know, I can understand if they were, because obviously, you know, it sounds like a great deal getting 8 years but from the league. But then again, you know, what were the other, you know, proponents of this 8-year deal? And maybe that wasn't kosher for them. And then I can understand why maybe they didn't accept it. But still, you know, there's a lot of talk, a lot of chatter, a lot of stuff being informed. I mean, the one thing that was really negative that I thought that the owners were going to do, obviously, was they would have given free agency to a player that's had 10 years with one club team. And the only guy that was basically, you know, nominated for that was Brad Davis of the Houston Dynamo. That's it. So, I mean, you know, Brad Davis getting an eight-year deal.
It's really clear that that would apply to. And in
right.
theory, Daniel, they could have argued that his San Jose and Houston were different clubs, and it didn't apply to him because he was 9 years in Houston, previous year in San Jose. What would have been?
And don't forget, he was drafted by the Metro Stars, now the New York Red Bulls, to start his career. So
right. But it would have applied to one player. Yeah, I think that was kind of an insulting offer. The first offer was an insult, but it did open the door for free agency, even though it was going to be only one player would apply to. The 28-8, I did some research today with numbers, or sorry, last night. The 28-8, from what I can gather, would have only applied to like 25 to 28 players in the league that I see on opening day rosters. So maybe they did a little better than that. But the 28-8 would apply to those players. When their contracts are up, the players I mentioned, if they're still in Major League Soccer at that point. Some of these guys won't be. Some of these guys will be in Europe. But I think once we look at the deal and the details, we could see MLS kind of emerging as a solid force in world football. Never going to be at the level of some of the top European leagues, although that European football is in flux too. I mean, I think this TV deal – I've been kind of ragging on the Premier League lately for their standard of play, but the TV deal the Premier League just signed is probably going to put them in a position where they shoot right past Spain and Germany and become the top league in the world again. You know, that money will kick in next year. I think now Major League Soccer, with the TV deal, with a settled CBA, with this Audi sponsorship, which, by the way, is an outgrowth of the original Volkswagen sponsorship, which was negotiated by DC United, the year Gallardo came to the league, which would have been, I can't even remember what year, 2008. So that is a major step forward, and I understand MLS, if they go to Minneapolis, within Team 24 might have another major sponsorship lined up in conjunction with bringing that team in. So MLS is now surging up the table as far as leagues. Leagues that can be considered top leagues in the world. Now, for MLS to really get to that point, this CBA has to be good for the players, because I think MLS has invested in a lot of things. They've spent money on a lot of things. The one thing they don't spend money on is the players that the league was built on, right? The players that built Major League Soccer are not David Beckham. They're not – I mean, I guess to a certain extent they're like Marco Echeverri and Carlos Valderrama, who are former players who –
of course.
Did very well in this league. But by and large, and they weren't Tav Ramos and John Harkes, the U.S. national team stars, by and large, they were guys like Mike Petke and Paul Bravo and, you know, guys like that, Ross Pauly, you know, these mid-level American players. And now that's giving away to guys like Ned Grabovoy and Brad Davis. And so those are the guys that have made Major League Soccer. And those are the guys who have consistently been screwed by the salary structure in Major League Soccer. So I hope the CBA means they finally get theirs, because they've earned it. 20 years, they've earned it.
Absolutely. And let's not also forget guys like Clint Mathis as well that helped grow this league after the time of these when the national team players from 94 and 1990 came back home finally to play in a league that they can call home, obviously.
Yeah. I'm looking at guys that really weren't regular national team players. You know, Mathis was a great player. Guys like Mike Petke that were MLS lifers that or nearly like Ante Razov, that's another guy. You know, guys like
exactly.
that became like these very, very solid American players. And obviously the ultimate MLS guy, Dwayne D. Rosario. You know, he never got the amount of money he should have gotten in his career for as good as he was. I mean, he's maybe the best player in the history of this league. I know David Beckham played in this league and Thierry Henry and Marco Echeverri and Valderrama and Donadoni. I know we've had some great Mateus, some great names. But as far as in this league specifically, I don't know that there's been a player better than Dwayne D. Rosario. And, you know, if he were that level player in another league, if he hadn't been Canadian and he had been, just a kind of a journeyman German player, let's say, or French player who was not on their national team but was really good, same level player as Di Rosario was as a star for the Canadian national team, he would have made a lot more money. So that's what I'm looking at. Guys like that, they needed to get a good CBA out of this, and I hope they did.
And let me just throw another name out there for you that, you know, you're talking about an MLS lifer, and this guy was definitely one of those, and at the same time, he wasn't technically gifted, but he always found a way to stick his nose, his foot, his leg, and put the ball in the back of the net, and that's currently New York Red Bulls 2 head coach John Wolanek. I mean, you're talking about him as an MLS lifer. Boy, I'll tell you, when he wasn't technically gifted, but when he got to the goal and when he got close, he put it in. I'll tell you. That's the type of guy that also deserved.
Wolanek was the guy that came from USL, Long Island Rough Riders. I think he had been on the Milwaukee Rampage at one time. Maybe he played with Tony Sane there. Yeah, I mean, those are the kinds of guys I'm talking about. That's what this was about. This wasn't about Michael Bradley, who, by the way, was great during this whole thing from the player's perspective. Clint Dempsey wasn't. Now, here's the thing. I mean, I don't want to get too deep into this. I mean, I'm sure we will get deep into this if we talk about the national team. But Michael Bradley is a leader in this whole thing. When he's fine, right? He cheats. He could care less, right? But he knows what the guys have suffered through in this league, and he left the league for a while. For many years, you know, had a successful career in Europe. Clint Dempsey, on the other hand, from what I understand, was completely disengaged. He really didn't care. He figured it wasn't his fight. Fair enough, but he wasn't really engaged. I will tell you, in 2010, Landon Donovan was really engaged. I mean, I thought that was one of the things that was going to hurt the players' union this go-around was that Donovan wasn't around. Donovan, you know, for all propaganda around him from MLS management. I mean, when they had Donovan as the player rep for the LA Galaxy, they were dealing with a tough cookie. He didn't give very easily. I mean, my understanding is he was one of the guys in 2010 that was ready to strike if they didn't get the deal they got. Now you can say it's easy for Donovan and Bradley because they made so much money and the strike wouldn't affect them as much. But no, I mean it would be easier for them to take the Clint Dempsey route and not get be involved in this. You know. Robbie Keane did well. You know, he made it clear in his interview with Grant Wall last week or 2 weeks ago that, you know, they don't get what they need to strike. And that's and his view was if 51% of the players say if the deal isn't good, then I'm going to say the deal's not good. Okay, it doesn't have to be 90%. I make enough money. I need to hear from the guys that need this. And if they don't think it's a good deal, then I'm going to side with them. So I've never heard that out of Clint Dempsey's mouth. I've heard Dempsey wasn't very engaged. His teammate Brad Evans was very engaged over in Seattle. But so the other thing I want to point out related to this is that Michael Bradley has had the reputation of a bit of a hothead. You've even seen that. You've even seen him act out Toronto's game against the Red Bulls last season. But he, I think, has now emerged within the player community in Major League Soccer as a guy with real cred, a guy who's come back and he's a leader. And he's an American. He's the son of the former national team coach. He's played at Roma. You know, he's played at, you know, some big clubs, right? I mean, Roma is a huge club. I just watched them against Juventus yesterday or 2 days ago in what was essentially title decider in Italy. Roma didn't get the result they needed, so Juve will probably win Serie A again. But I think he emerges with a lot of credit on the player side, and then you said on the management side, obviously Don Garber, Mark Abbott, those guys get the deal done that they needed to get done. So that's important.
All right, so here we go. Here is the information. This is from Paul Tenorio. from the Orlando Sentinel. Obviously, he's a happy camper right now. The home opener will begin on ESPN for Orlando City as the two sides coming into MLS. Of course, one expansion, one through financial promotion, Orlando City FC.
Yeah, right.
Orlando City, excuse me. Here it is, according to a source with direct knowledge of the deal. As we already said, it's a five-year deal. That creates free agency for players 20 older with at least 8 years' experience. According to that source, the free agency is capped depending on salary. Players who are making less than $100,000 have a cap of 125% increase of their salaries. Players making between $100,000 to $200,000 have a cap of 120%, and players making more than $200,000 or more have a cap of 115%. In addition, the new CBA includes a minimum salary of $60,000. I think that's a huge bump, a substantial step up from the 2014 minimum of
$36,500.
So that's at least
Daniel, that's let's see. So Tenorio's reporting that.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's I mean that minimum salary thing is a little bit. A little bit worrying because I have to tell you, I was told that there was an opportunity. Let me back up here. There was an opportunity to get that minimum salary up to 70 or 75, but that would have required the players to give up on all free agents, which they weren't going to do. So, yeah, I guess 60 is a happy medium since you're getting some free agency. Okay, yeah, continue.
Yeah, well, just to finish it off, just to say here, I was going to say that's not so much it's double, but you know what? That's not bad because the minimum was from the end of last year, $36,500. The minimum will increase incrementally per year. He says that the source said there was also an increase in the overall salary cap, which that's even better, though they could not immediately provide that number. So you know what? If there's going to be at least a higher level number wise on the salary cap per club. I mean, hopefully it's another, you wish it would be maybe another 6-7 million, you know, make it a little bit more breathing room if possible. But if it's another 2-4 million, I think that's not a bad deal.
I don't know if it's another 2-4 million. We'll have to find out.
We're going to have to find out on that one.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do some quick math here. They adjusted the minimum salary to 60. They may have bumped the salary cap up to like 3.75 million. That's not good enough. Yeah, we're quite honest.
That's not good enough. No.
I think players very much are divided on this, even former players. Taylor Twellman has been pretty adamant about the players need to get a good deal. Tonight he was on ESPN FC and he was kind of hedging, although he was taking more that this deal or what had leaked out was decent, was good. Alejandro Moreno, on the other hand, you know, another, you know, MLS lifer and a guy that didn't have the offers to go to Europe, but Twellman did. You know, Twellman got bumps in salary because European teams came in, Preston North End most notably, tried to buy him, and New England wouldn't let him go. Let him go. Because, of course, his contract was owned by the league, as we know, under a single entity. Ali Moreno was, I think he was disappointed by what he, and you go back and watch ESPN FC, those you guys listening, if you have it on DVR, maybe there'll be clips on
it. I've already watched it, yeah. I mean, I
understand. Thrilled with the deal.
No, he's not. I bet he's not. And you know what? I mean, I don't blame him, you know, but then again, you know, here's my situation of everything is that, you know, it's either going to be you're going to have to go 100% all in, or in some ways it's going to have to be baby steps because people have to understand that this isn't Europe. This isn't Europe where I guess contracts don't matter. Contracts do matter. I don't believe there's a CBA between the English players.
Well, here's what happened there in Europe, just to make it. If the MLS players had won if Robin Fraser had won his lawsuit against the league, the situation would be like Europe. Europe, there isn't a CBA because there was a lawsuit and the players won it, basically. So, you know, the player power there, right? The players are ruling the roots. The owners that are the ones that would probably want a CBA. So some sort, right? To try and raise in costs. So the lawsuits, I mean, it's not they're not apples to apples, but they're not really apples to oranges either. The Frazier lawsuit against Single Entity, Robin Frazier's lawsuit, similar lawsuit by Bosman, you know, the Bosman ruling, which you hear about all the time when you watch Premier League games or La Liga games. That Bosman ruling by the European courts basically created this system of player power where there is no CBA. The players are in control of European football. Actually, more than the players, the player agents are in control of European football. I mean, it's and there are agents. Now, let me say this, even though I've largely been on the player side here. There are player agents that, including the Wasserman agency that basically runs the MLSPU, Bob Foos, close associate of theirs, Eddie Pope was a Wasserman client most of his career, most of his playing career. There are agents that want a similar kind of that they push the players union. So a lot of this is driven by player agents. And in fact, you know, what I've been hearing the last couple of weeks, Daniel, is that there were player agents telling their players, be strong, strike. And, you know, that's fine. That's fine. That's in Europe, it's now the balance is still totally towards the players and the players' agents. The agents more than the agents are the ones really getting rich. I mean, in fact, you see these transfer fees published. So I'll give you this example. Chelsea paid Atletico Madrid $30 or $35 million for Diego Costa. I believe over half of that was an agent fee. The various agents involved in the deal. That is what's happened. That's what some agents, they won't say this to you openly, and you and I were both friendly with many agents, Daniel. They're not going to say this to you openly because they don't think the system will ever take place in the U.S., but they would like to get towards that, where, you know, there's a deal between two clubs in MLS because Single Entity's broken up, and one club has to buy, Columbus has to buy a player from San Jose, and Columbus is having to pay a transfer fee to San Jose, and half of that transfer fee, that transfer fee isn't just to buy out a player X's contract and give San Jose money. Half that money is being kicked back to whoever the agent is, you know, and you know, whether it's you know, a Richard Botkin or a Lyle Yorks or Wasserman or a Pat McCabe, you know, whoever it is. That's the model in Europe, and I think ultimately some of our agent friends would like that model in the U.S. Now, should we have that model? I don't think that we shouldn't have that model. I just think that you can't get there in one collective bargaining negotiation.
No, you can't, and that's what I'm. And I agree with you. I don't think we can, because if you do, I mean, how quickly would it basically? I mean, I'm only assuming here. I mean, this could lead to self-destruction. I don't know. I don't think it will. But, I mean, you have to throw out the possibilities that it could happen. But still, you know, like I've said about Single Entity, I understand many people want to get rid of it. And, you know, I'm also of a sound mind, I believe you as well, that Single Entity should go away either all the way from start to finish at 100%, or maybe year by year, we're going to break it down slowly, because I feel that if that happens a little bit better, then MLS can survive a little bit better. And all those fun things.
I mean, you know, Single Entity is an issue. And it's eventually going to have to be... it's going to eventually have to be dealt with, okay? Single entity can't last forever. Now, the courts obviously ruled that it is you know, it's something that's legal under U.S. antitrust laws and under U.S. competition laws, but that doesn't mean it's necessarily ethical, and it doesn't mean it's necessarily ideal, okay? I think Single Entity was important to get MLS to this point. I do not see the utility in it beyond where we are. I think it serves to stifle player wages. I think it serves to the argument that they give is that it gives MLS a competitive an ability to be competitive when competing in the global market against the club, the big clubs, you know, the Juventuses, the Bayerns, the Manchester United, mm-hmm. Manchester City, those sorts of clubs. But I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, if you're Real Salt Lake, it probably helps you in that sense. But Real Salt Lake isn't looking to attract the big name DP. Does it necessarily help? It might help some clubs, but does it help Toronto FC, sitting in the most cosmopolitan city in North America? Toronto is a city that so many people around the world want to live in. I mean, I think Toronto has the ability to go out and compete for players on their own. I think they're probably okay. I think Los Angeles is probably, both LA clubs are probably okay. Both New York, well, 1 year.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, they're not a good data point, right? But the Red Bulls can be competitive. Mm-hmm. Now could, when the Miami team comes into the league, they'll be competitive in that same standpoint because it's a global city. But is Kansas City able to compete? Is Orlando able to compete? Is Portland able to compete in a global market when there's not a single entity? That would be the fallback position that MLS management will tell you, that those smaller market teams, you know, I can just rattle them, Columbus, Orlando, Portland, Salt Lake, Kansas City, those types of markets, will they be as competitive in a global marketplace as a Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, Toronto, Miami, Vancouver, as those really international cities could be? And of course, Washington and the Boston team were ever serious, they could compete, but they're not serious, right, under Bob Kraft's ownership. There are tiers of markets, and I guess single entity, at least in theory, protects the Salt Lakes, the Kansas City, the Portlands, the Orlandos, the Columbuses, right? But if you're Seattle, if you're Los Angeles, if you're Toronto, if you're New York, if you're David Beckham, when he goes to Miami, you know, and you're in those types of markets, a single entity is a bit of a hindrance. You know, Seattle's very interesting test case on this, Daniel. I think now that Garth is there, Loggerway, as the GM, they might push the envelope a little more because Garth is one of the smartest guys in professional soccer. I think he's one of the smartest guys in professional sports in the United States. Now, I'll admit I don't know a whole lot about the other sports, but you know, he's one of the smartest guys out there. And this is important. I think we're seeing a movement away from like a jockocracy running sports to like more intellectually sound former players. Garth Lagerwey, of course, is a former player, but you know, just really sharp intellect. With him linked up with a major organization now in Seattle that can actually, you know, Garth had to play a little bit of money ball, he and Jason Kreis within MLS, right, with Real Salt Lake. But now that he's in an international team, or a team that can go and get players from wherever, and Kreis is obviously linked up with Man City. Kreis is another guy, incredibly smart. I mean, that's why Salt Lake was so good. They had two of – if I were to rank the smartest guys in just intellectually, I'm not talking about like, oh, they're the smartest in this way or that, but they know like the smartest, book smartest guys in Major League Soccer, yeah, in my top five, I would have those two guys, Kreis and Lagerwey. Now they're both in big markets. Now, maybe they want to push the envelope a little bit. So I'm really interested in seeing – I know we got to get back to the CBA, but I'm really interested in seeing Lagerwey over the course of the next few years in Seattle. Seattle could emerge as the elite club, the club that finally knocks the LA Galaxy off its perch, and they actually have lots of supporters unlike the LA Galaxy. They actually have major market penetration. Seattle Sounders could become the first massive club to come out of Major League Soccer, I think, with Garth Lagerwey there. So keep an eye on that.
No, definitely. I mean, obviously, Seattle's been building very well. They've been building very strong. And all I can say is that I keep forgetting already what I was going to say. But I agree that, that Seattle is trying to become a super club within Major League Soccer. So I wouldn't be surprised that Seattle would be that number one club coming out of MLS. So it's going to be very interesting and very, very exciting to see what's going on. Of course, just to give everyone an update, if you're not watching, DC United has scored in the first half in the 37th and 36th minute. They're up 1-0 in the second leg, but they're down on aggregate 5-3 now. And let's not forget, DC United also has the two away goals that they got in the first leg down in Costa Rica. But, boy, oh, boy, I'm telling you, Kardik, as we are discussing this once again, I would not blame the players if they said no and they wanted more, if they could get more, if they did strike. Obviously, it's not what all of us would like. I think I'm just happy that we're going to have a season. Once again, it goes down to the wire, and we're going to have ourselves a 20th season finally that is going to get played, and hopefully we'll celebrate this 20th season in style, and then we'll really celebrate it next year.
Right. You know, and that's something I think that everybody, all soccer fans around the country have been waiting for. I mean, there's a contingent of New York Cosmos fans and maybe a couple other assorted other NASL fans that wanted to see a strike and wanted to see MLS run into some sort of trouble. I'm not sure why soccer fans would feel that way. And actually, Dan, let me just take this moment. I'm going to indulge me for a moment on this. I tweeted something, I guess, that was controversial earlier, about an hour ago after the CBA agreement was reached, that basically said professional soccer was saved. And then people came back at me and said, well, there's other pro soccer going on. I, of course, am the former communications director for the NASL, so yes, I'm aware the NASL exists, right? and I've done work with USL, too, in the past. So let me clarify what I was saying. The MLS, now especially with the salary bump to 60 at minimum salaries, is the only fully professional league in the United States and Canada. The NASL has players that don't make a living wage. They really don't even make minimum wage if you calculate the salaries they make, okay? So it's not just about living wage. I should say it's also about minimum wage. They have to get second jobs. They have to get third jobs. USL has even more of those guys. A lot of the USL and NASL teams don't have professional staff. They have part-time staff. They have some professionals in their front office. They also have a lot of part-timers. I have a professional team down the road from me here. You know, I'm going to be covering Orlando City this year in Major League Soccer, not only because I'm in Orlando a lot and it's basically kind of local to me, but also because I have a team 5 minutes from me, the Fort Lauderdale Strikers, that I've been closely associated with in the past that have treated all their players like they were disposable, temporary, part-time workers. Okay? That's why half that team is on Tampa Bay now. Tampa Bay is a professional team, but that doesn't mean because Tampa Bay is a professional team that the entire NASL that they play in is a professional league. No, Fort Lauderdale is not a fully professional team. I'm sorry. I'm going to say that right here, full stop. Fort Lauderdale is not a fully professional team. Atlanta is not a fully professional team. Carolina is run professionally, but it's not necessarily a fully professional team when you look at some of the salaries guys make. I mean, you can't look at the salaries guys make. I'm just telling you what I know because there's no players union to lose salaries. USL is even worse in some cases. So that's what I meant. I'm not taking shots at players. I'm not taking shots at fans of leagues. I'm not taking shots at those leagues, ultimately. I'm just stating that my standard for being professional is that guys get paid a living wage to where they don't have to have second and third jobs. They don't have to get off of training at 11 and go work at Jamba Juice or go work at Starbucks or go coach youth soccer somewhere to make ends meet. There are still guys in MLS that have to do that. Hopefully they won't have to with this new CBA. There are lots of guys, and I hate to burst the bubble of people who are fans of NASL teams or USL teams. And I'll say there are exceptions. Minnesota, an NASL, fully professional. Tampa Bay, NASL, fully professional. New York Cosmos, fully professional. Fort Lauderdale, not fully professional. Atlanta, not fully professional. Okay, so there are guys that you think might make a fair amount of money. They're not treated like professionals by their organizations. They're not necessarily treated even like professionals by their leagues. Not in the case of NASL, but in the case of USL. So that's what I meant, okay? And I'm sorry.
Yeah, of course.
Took it the wrong way. I mean, everybody's taking it the wrong way. I'll put a statement out on Twitter and on Facebook later this, but that's what I meant. So thank you for indulging me on the clarification about my comments.
No, not a problem at all. I mean, look, Kardik, I can understand where you're coming from. And let me just say this, and I just want to say this. This is my own opinion, of course. I don't appreciate it personally when certain people – I understand there are certain people who don't like Major League Soccer. I understand they don't like the way the structure is. And believe me, I'm like many of those that wants to see the structure change from single entity to a little bit more of a free-flowing way of things like how it's done in Europe. I don't think you get it full blown, but you're going to at least get something like it. But the point I'm making is this. If you are looking for MLS to go away, to disappear, I believe that's the wrong thing to do. I don't wish the NASL would go away. I don't even wish the USL goes away, or their PDL amateur league, or the NPSL, or any other league. I may disagree with some of the front office people from some of the leagues, but I don't want any league to disappear because it makes no sense and it ruins the game here in this country. It ruins the what the national team is supposed to be building towards, winning its first ever World Cup, or at least getting to its first ever World Cup final. That's all I'm saying. We cannot wish or hope MLS goes away. We cannot do that. I will never do that. I'll never wish the NASL to go away. I'll never wish USL to go away because we need more clubs. We need these leagues to help grow the game and make our national team bigger and better. And yes, if we're going to see foreign players coming to our leagues and improve themselves for their national team, whether it's in within CONCACAF or South America or UEFA or wherever, I mean, that's fine. Let them come over. We need to grow the game. And I understand, once again, I don't like single entity. I'm not a proponent for single entity. I agree with you and everyone else that doesn't like it. I believe it's time for single entity to go away. But until that day does come, we have to stick with what we have. We have to be happy with what we have. I understand it's frustrating at times, and believe me, I share in the frustration. But we all have to understand, we cannot wish any league to disappear. And please let's not forget, U.S. Soccer and MLS are tied to the hip. So let's not forget about that.
I mean, I wonder how joined at the hip they are anymore with Jurgen Klinsmann. Sunil Gulati's obviously backed Jurgen Klinsmann, and Klinsmann has irritated Don Garber and MLS to no end. So, I look at Major League Soccer, and I think that now they've gotten this past them. Now is the time they have to grow. They have to make this serious. They have to make this a real top flight professional, I'm saying they're fully professional, right? And the other two leagues in the country aren't, but they have to make this a full-on top league. This is the United States of America and Canada. We have, I think, the second most cosmopolitan city in the world in Toronto. They have a team in this league. We have New York City with two teams. We've got Los Angeles with two teams. We don't have a team in San Francisco, but we have a team in Seattle. We're going to have a team in Miami again soon. These are major global cities, Chicago also. You have to have product that's representative of those cities. Right now, Major League Soccer does not have a product that is representative of the stature of Los Angeles. Full stop. I know the Galaxy won all these MLS Cups. The Galaxy are not a team. The Galaxy are still not at the level they should be, being the premier professional soccer club, the premier team in a global city like Los Angeles in the biggest sport in the world, okay? So you have to think about it from that perspective. Same thing with the New York teams. Red Bull has made an effort. I think there was initially an effort to do it with the Metro Stars year one, but it didn't pan out. Year one and two of the league, and then they just pulled back. So now that the CBA is out of the way, they got this television contract, they got all these new sponsors coming online, they have got to make this work. They have got to make this more more appealing for global fans of the sport. And hopefully they took a big step towards doing that today. And we'll see. I mean, we can't make snap early judgments on this. But hopefully within the course of the next 6 to 8 weeks, we'll know.
Absolutely. And hopefully all I can say is, Kardik, is that we're going to have – better labor peace now. And I hope the next time we get to the ending of this current CBA that just been signed, I only hope that the owners and the players will talk to each other and be a lot better with conversation, because I got to say that that's it, basically. I mean, that's all I got to say, because, I mean, that's the situation that we need better dialogue between both sides. Both sides have to understand is that they cannot be barking at each other like wild rabid dogs while you're being tied to a tree and the the leash is strong enough to hold them back. But still, it's just one of those things where I would like to see better dialogue from both sides.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that that's a you know, it is kind of a do or die type thing what happened today, and I don't want to say do or die because I actually, and let me just throw this out there, we haven't talked about this. I think when you look at what could have happened if the scenario for a strike had played out, there were reports out there that the MLS Players Union only had 4 weeks worth of money, right, in the strike fund.
Uh-huh.
You saw this report, Daniel. Let me actually tell you now that it's done. I think I can report this, and I've been sitting on this for a week, or a little less than a week, but what is today, Wednesday? Yeah, I've been sitting on it for 6 days. The MLS Players Union and some of the players in Major League Soccer had done some outreach to other unions, both other professional sports unions, and to FIFPro, the International Players Union, the union that represents players in Europe.
Yep.
They were going to be able to keep that strike fund at an optimum level for much longer than 4 weeks. I can safely report that they now those things wouldn't have been triggered unless they would have gotten on strike. But I think we would have seen I don't want to tell you which players unions, but a couple of the other players unions in North America and FIFPro come in. Now, could they have sustained a 6 month strike, a season long strike? No, they still couldn't have. But the talk was that they could support players for two paychecks, and then things would fall apart on like April 1st. I can tell you, I can report tonight that would not have been the case. And Major League Soccer's management knew that, which is part of the reason they moved so quickly towards accommodating some of the players' demands. Because had that not been the case, had that 4 weeks been accurate, which had been reported by numerous reporters, and I think a lot of the reporters that reported that probably also knew what I knew. I think they're probably talking to the same people. But also, sat on it for obvious reasons. Then MLS would have been in no hurry to get a deal done. They would have been like, March 6th could be April 6th, right? Because we're going to break the union in the process. But I think they knew that there was some major support coming behind MLSPU. Bob Foose had done some smart politicking, Eddie Pope and others. So I guess the next thing to watch is this players' union. There are a number of players, as we said tonight, that aren't happy with the deal. Ivis Galarcev, a great reporter, New Jersey, a former classmate of yours, Daniel.
And Kardik, he's my college buddy.
Yeah, right. That's what I said. He's a former classmate of yours. He's done some very good reporting on this tonight, going a step further than what I had heard. And, those players that Ivis is talking about, those teams, do not be surprised if some of them are sniffing around for different union representation so they get a better deal 7 years, 5 years from now, excuse me, 5 year deal. I do think, however, with this deal, based on the details that are beginning to leak out, that Bob Foose and Eddie Pope and the guys at the union are pretty safe, and they've done a job well done. But there will be some players dissatisfied who will look around Washington, D.C. for another law firm, or Washington, D.C. or New York. Those would be the two places to look for another law firm to represent them. But I think deal done. Good news for all of us, and let's play ball.
Absolutely. For Major League Soccer, their 20th season will kick off this Friday night, 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific. The L.A. Galaxy hosting the Chicago Fire on UniMa Saturday, March 7th. D.C. United versus Montreal at RFK at 3 o'clock Eastern. Maybe, who knows, that could also be the semifinal matchup in the CONCACAF Champions League.
It could be. Yeah.
Philadelphia hosting Colorado. Vancouver hosting Toronto. FC Dallas hosting San Jose. Houston hosting Columbus. Portland hosting Real Salt Lake. And then the big Sunday nighter, or Sunday three game there, Orlando hosting New York City FC on ESPN2 at 5 o'clock. Sporting Kansas City hosting the New York Rebels on Fox Sports 1 at 7 p.m. Eastern, and the doubleheader, of course, Seattle hosting New England, Fox Sports 1 as well at 9:30. Kartik, thanks a lot, and I will talk to you next time. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Toronto, Vancouver. That's a great first week opener, too. So thank you, Daniel.
Yes,
you're done, and I think we're all happy.
Yes, we all are. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this special edition of the Four Seasons Fire, and we will talk to you on Friday, CONCACAF Champions League review show, quarterfinals, second leg. Bye-bye for now. Enjoy your football. Thank you very much.